This is the Clinical Pharmacology Podcast with Nathan Tuescher, where I discuss clinical pharmacology and pharmacometrics topics from the perspective of drug development scientists. Welcome, everyone. Today's podcast is about communication. I believe that success in almost any pharmaceutical discipline is more dependent on our communication skills than our technical acumen. When I started my career, my focus was on acquiring new technical skills and expanding my expertise. I learned how to use nonlinear fitting programs, how to code in S+, to manipulate data, how to code in Perl to process non-MEM output files, and how to build Excel macros using Visual Basic. I focused on understanding the mathematical relationships required to perform clinical pharmacology and pharmacometrics work. I felt that learning these things would make me an expert in this discipline and help my career progress. However, I was wrong. What helped my career progress were the conversations I had with colleagues that were not in my department or discipline. During these conversations, I explained things like how AUC is calculated and what it means. What does dose proportionality actually mean? What is constant clearance? How does model estimation work? And more. These interactions drove me to improve my communication skills. My wife's input was critical in this aspect. She has a bachelor's degree in elementary education and taught primary school children who are between the ages of 6 and 12 years old. And she told me that effective teachers provide instruction in a way that the students can understand. And often a teacher will need to use multiple methods to explain the same topic to reach different students in the class. These conversations led me to begin my blog, LearnPKPD, where I wrote short-form explanations of many clinical development topics. Thereafter, my career accelerated and I saw massive progression. I realized that becoming a successful communicator was one key to my personal success and growth. I continue to learn new technical skills, but I have always made it an effort to share or teach those skills to others as soon as possible so that I can improve my communication skills. So today, I've invited Michael Paperno to my podcast to talk about communication skills. I met Michael while preparing for a meeting with an FDA advisory committee. Michael helped me refine my messaging and gave me tips on my speech patterns to help me more effectively communicate in that public meeting. Michael's a communication expert, trainer, and coach with 28 years of experience helping professionals communicate clearly, speak and present more effectively, build and maintain positive and healthy business relationships, and lead with confidence. He has specific experience in helping development teams create compelling messages and present them with clarity and confidence during high-stakes presentations. He is also an entrepreneur whose successes include founding, scaling, and selling a brand communications agency with international clients in healthcare, including large and small pharmaceutical companies, health insurers, and medical communications firms. Michael holds a Master's of Science in Strategic Communication from Purdue University and bachelor's degrees in Communication Studies and Speech and Theater Arts from Montclair State University. Michael, welcome to the podcast.
Nathan, I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me on the show. I appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. Please take a few minutes and introduce yourself and some of your thoughts on communication skills for scientists.
Well, I don't know if I can top that introduction with introducing myself, because that sounded pretty good. I was like, wow, this guy sounds pretty good. So thank you for that, Nathan. You made me sound accomplished, which I appreciate. Yeah, I'm a lover of good communication, Nathan. And I feel like my life's calling was to help brilliant, smart, and talented people be better communicators, because I happen to be trained in it and I happen to also be good at it. So I really love helping others, and I feel like it's my life's work. And specifically, helping them be clear and concise. And that's one of the things that you're very good at. I have to give you kudos on a recent episode I listened of your podcast where you explained cell therapy. And, you know, I know how that works, but I'd never heard it explained so crisply and clearly. So kudos to you for doing that. Yeah, absolutely.
So tell me about some common mistakes that you have seen technical experts make when they're doing, you know, presentations or maybe having business interactions that you know, impact or you know, negatively impact how their message comes across to their audience.
Sure. Well, I'll start with three, and then you can tell me if you want to hear more, because there are a lot of mistakes that I've seen over my 30 years of helping people be better speakers and presenters. But especially when it comes to scientists and other technical presenters, the first thing, the biggest thing I see, Nathan, is they think that the data is going to speak for itself. So they show the data on slides, they talk through the data with an audience, and they forget that the audience might be different than the typical peer audience that they talk to, and they don't tell the audience the story that they see in the data. So that's one of the biggest mistakes, is a lack of storytelling when it comes to scientific and technical topics. The second one I see so much, and you know, I know you've seen this as well, is overloaded slides. So just putting so much on the slide that the person who's seeing it for the first time, even if they got a pre-read, the person who's seeing it for the first time doesn't know where to look, doesn't know where to start. And you know what, Nathan? When someone's reading and trying to figure out what they're seeing, guess what they're not doing?
Yep, they're not listening to you.
They're not listening. That's right. So if they're not listening, then they are telling the story to themselves and drawing their own conclusions based on what they're seeing rather than what they should be hearing from you. So those, and not only overloading slides, but then not orienting people to the slide. So they throw a slide up, and instead of saying, what we see here is this, and I'd like to direct your eye to the blue bars, where they don't do that, and then you're just allowing your audience to just skim the slide and see what they want to see. So overloaded slides and not orienting is another one. And then the third one is really the curse of knowledge. We think that we remember that it's important to remember that you know, as a scientist or as some technical speaker, you know more than your audience does. And you've lived and breathed the data. You care deeply about it. And we often see people throwing jargon and acronyms at people, or just giving them too much of the information that they don't necessarily need to hear for you to be effective with communicating your key message. Sometimes we just think more is better. We're proving, we're convincing, but sometimes less is more. And I think you can see here, Nathan, that the theme line in all of these mistakes is not really considering your audience enough. And that's the first rule of any good communication, is to consider your audience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if I need to give credit to you for these or others, but you know, a couple of things that you said really jumped out at me, which is, you know, the first is people can read faster than they can hear and process data. So when you put words up on a slide, people are going to read those probably two or three times faster than you can actually verbalize them and say them, even if you're talking fast. And so, you know, one of the things I've done or tried to do is avoid words on slides if you can help it, and don't write sentences out, you know, because they're going to be reading those words when you're talking and not listening to you, which is, I think, one of the things you said. So, but as a scientist, how do we overcome that in our presentations? How do we, you know, we're so used to having these bullet point conclusions, right, with sentences written out. What are some alternatives that we can do to avoid allowing the listener to be a reader instead of a listener?
Yeah, well, number one, a pre-read is a pre-read and it's not a presentation. So if you need the deck, the slides, the presentation to speak for you when you're not there, then you create a separate document for that. But you should not be presenting that, because again, okay, it's going to be overloaded like you. So sometimes you need two decks to do both jobs. My method is, and this works especially for my healthcare clients, is life sciences clients, is allow yourself to get all that out of your head, all the full sentences and everything. And if you want to do it on slides, do it on slides. Fine. Okay. But that's not going to be what you show. What I do is I then say, okay, let's paste that in the slide notes. Now we're going to whittle down what the audience needs to see on the slide to be able to so that the slide will support you, not replace you. And very often, that's getting it down to five, six, seven bullets, maybe three bullets would be even greater, and phrases, not complete sentences. It's amazing how you can tighten up a slide just by taking out unnecessary words. So when you do this process, read your script, read your points out loud, and then as you're looking at the slide, just say to yourself, okay, what do they not need to see because I'm already saying it? So that's just one way that they can do that. The other thing is with tables and graphs and things like, and other figures and things like that, a lot of times I hear, they need to see the whole table for context. I can't just show them the part that we're talking about. Well, that's fine. If you're going to show something that's robust like that, then you need to do the work for the audience of telling them exactly where to look. You can use colored boxes to show them. You can use animations or builds to bring up things as you're talking to them. And you can even just do the nice, polite thing now let's look at the third column, fourth row down. Just doing something simple like that will make their eyes go right to it instead of letting them try to find that number that you know is coming out of your mouth, but they don't know it's coming out yet.
Yeah. No, that's great. I kind of think of a presentation like a movie, right? When we go to the movies, we're seeing what the director wants us to see. We're not seeing the whole scene. We're just seeing what right. they want us to see. And I think in presentations, we need to think that way, is show them, I want you to see this, so we're going to focus on this. You may draw back and show them something different about that same scene later.
Right.
But that's the purpose of a presentation, is helping them see these things to help understand the point you're trying to make. So I think that's great advice.
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of what you prepare should be on the editing room floor. I love that movie example that you just gave, because you need to go through the iterative process to get it right. And then cut, where we don't need the extraneous stuff. I love that analogy, Nathan. That's great.
Yeah. So the second thing that you said that I really love, and this is something that I have put into practice, especially on technical topics, when I have a technical topic that I need to explain to a non-technical person. So a physician, I need to explain a modeling project to them. What works, I think, effectively is before I present almost any graph or plot or chart or a table, I usually have a slide up there that says, this is what I'm going to show you. And I just want to walk through the parts of this so you can understand what all these pieces are. And so I'll put a big chart up and no text on it. And I might walk through, okay, this line represents this. Mm-hmm. This shaded region represents this. The x-axis, we have this. The y-axis, we have this. And I want it to look like this if it's a good model. It looks like this if it's a bad model. And I walk through that with them so that they can understand, almost explaining, hey, this is how this works. Now I'm going to show you the real results from the model. And it allows them to interpret it themselves when looking at the plot, and you can highlight specific areas. So I think that's really effective, but I don't see many people doing it. What's your thought on the best ways to do that? Or, is it always necessary? Is it only necessary in certain situations? What are some thoughts you have on that?
I think that you're making the exact point that it's audience specific, whether you need to do that. I actually love that you do that, because what you're doing in that moment of taking the time to walk them through what they're seeing and what you want them to understand about what they're seeing, you're welcoming them into your world by doing that, rather than just putting something up there and saying, okay, come into my world right now. Here's the results. No, some audiences aren't ready for that. They don't have the knowledge that you have, or it's an unfamiliar topic. If you're introducing a topic or something unfamiliar to someone, you can't overload them. They're not ready for that. You have to, the more that you're, someone doesn't know, the simpler the slides can be. Now, the more someone does know, like let's say you're in a room with, other clinical pharmacologists, and you could put a model up that's common, that everybody understands what they're looking at, and just simply orient them to the, this is a model of the, I'm sure we're all familiar with the da-da, and then you get right to your point. You don't have to go through all that, because you know they're all there. The analogy I use that I like people, I'm a visual thinker, and that I tell my clients is, think of a hang glider in the air, and that's you, the hang glider, giving your presentation. Where's your audience? Are they way below you in altitude? Are they way above you? Or are they right where you're at? And when you have that visual, you're going to glide, and you want to be gliding at the level, at the altitude that they're at, or that they can accept in order to learn something new. When you get that right, then it forces you to relook at your slides, relook at your talking points, and say, okay, what do I need to do? And it's not someone will say, oh, you want me to dumb it down? No, I don't mean dumb anything down, but I mean honor the audience and do the work to help them get on the same page and understand you.
Yeah, I love that. You know, honor the audience. I love that little catchphrase. You should trademark that. Yeah. but it's not about dumbing it down. It's about helping them understand. And so you need to connect with them, you know, with things that they understand. And that's really honoring them and respecting them as audience members and saying, I want to help you understand this, and this is why I think it's important. And when you do that, they actually give you really good feedback and say, well, I don't think that's important, and here's why. And
right.
That may influence what I do in the future and say, oh, you're right. That I didn't even think about that, right? Because that was, we're on different, we work different ways and think about different things. So I love that. Honor the audience. I love that.
Absolutely.
Thought.
Yep.
So we talked a lot about presentation sort of content and style and how we move through things. Talk to me a little bit about speaking cadence and choice of, you know, how you get that feedback from the audience. How do you know if they're understanding? How do you know if they're engaged, if you're hitting the mark or need to adjust? What are some techniques or tips that you can suggest for that?
Absolutely. And the tips would be different, a little different for people who are more nervous speakers as to people who are less nervous speakers, but I'll try to go middle of the road for that. But you want to be monitoring what's going on with your audience. So if you're in person, that's a lot easier. You can see the body language. You can see the eye contact. Virtually, it can be a little tougher, especially if you're in a room with people who don't have their cameras on. And even with the cameras on, there's just a vibe of, and a richness that's not quite there that then you would get from being in person. But it's important to, here's the thing. If you're seeing that your audience is not tuned in, and you can see it on people's faces, Nathan, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could tell when an audience is checking out. Well, then that means that you're not engaging them. And the reason you're not engaging them could be many things. It could be some of the things we talked about. It's the content's too robust, or you're throwing too much data, or the slides. But it also could be that you're not using your communication toolkit, your voice, your body language. You have a powerful toolkit when you're speaking, and your voice, even without video, can do the work of engaging. So when you think about what I mean there is, you have a monotone speaker who's just talking. It's obvious that they're scripted and they're just talking at you. Well, that's not engaging.
Yep.
But when you have someone who's got vocal variety in their voice, they're speaking in a conversational tone, maybe they're even asking you to interact. I mean, that's one of my tactics is I get the audience interacting with me right from the beginning so that I, and that's an easy way for me to start reading them. I like to hear from the audience, but I'm comfortable tailoring my presentation. I have a lot of experience doing it in the moment based on what I hear. Other people aren't comfortable with that, so that could throw them. So you have to find your kind of balance. I will tell you one thing for getting started on a presentation, because that's the part, besides Q&A, getting started on your presentation is usually the part that people find most nerve-wracking and get the most anxiety. What I do is I basically read the room before I even start. When people are filtering in, I say good morning, I say hello, I introduce myself, or if they're already an audience that's in their seats, I just kind of skim and I look around, I smile. The ones who smile back, the ones who nod their head, the ones who give me eye contact, they're my allies. And what I do is I start to deliver it right to them. And then that gets me going. And then I get comfortable and I'm good and I'm fine. Because I don't know if I ever told you, Nathan, but I was a former actor. I used to have horrible stage fright. And it almost got in my way completely. And I would be fine during rehearsals. But then when you would put people in the seats and the lights would go down, I would shake. And I mean, my voice would shake, my hands would shake. So I got past that. But it still happens sometimes. You know, I'll still get nervous with all the experience that I have. So I use that tactic of finding my allies in the audience and delivering it to those nice, warm faces who are smiling back at me, and it just gets me going.
That's great. Awesome suggestion. I hadn't thought about finding your allies in the audience.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things I've started doing is actually, so I think some of it is the way you prepare your presentation and tell them what you're going to tell them, tell them, and then tell them what you told them. And so I started putting all my conclusions are on the first or second slide. hey, today we're going to talk about these, and I've done this and this and this, and here are the results. And then you show them the results, and then you come back and do it again. And and that helps because it orients them a little bit to what you're talking about, but it also gives me an opportunity to pause. And so sometimes I'll ask the question is, I'm going to stop right here. Do you have any questions right now? That's a great thing to say after your, you know, summary slide at the beginning where you say, hey, here's the conclusions I'm going to show you. Because somebody might raise their hand and say, that's not at all what I wanted to see. Oh, that's great to know, because and I'm not going to meet your needs. Maybe we should stop this discussion now and I need to go fix what I did. Right. But also it might say, no, we're good. Or I don't understand what you mean by this. Oh, I'll explain that a few slides down the road. Mm-hmm. And so I like asking questions and at specific points and saying, I'm going to stop. Does anyone have any questions? And the hardest part of that for me is the silence that comes afterwards.
Yeah.
You have to leave a silent space for people to think and formulate a question because they're not ready for it. And that silence is sometimes very troubling. But if you can count to 10 in your head and nobody says anything, say, great, I'm going to move on. And if they don't have any questions, great. But if they do, it gives them enough time to think of a question and start talking.
Absolutely. And that silence is a gift, even though it feels awkward. And that's one of the silver linings of the COVID pandemic is we all got a little more used to silence in the virtual world. So it feels, I think it feels a little less awkward for people these days. But I'll just give you an example, Nathan. I was facilitating a 2-day workshop last week, 10 great, amazing leaders. And I used to be in the habit when I was younger of as soon as it was silent, I would fill it in because I would think that would make people feel more comfortable. So I'd speak up and I'd talk. But I was noticing with the workshop last week that I felt like, okay, I asked who has questions and I would have the awkward silence and I would look around the room and some people would look away from me if I looked at them and other people would just stare me down. But always someone spoke up.
Yep.
Someone spoke up. And if I had continued on, they wouldn't have. And I like how you have your checkpoints too, where you'll check in with them along the way, because if someone's not understanding and you don't give them the opportunity to either express that or get clarification, they're going to check out further the more you go. So I think that's actually a great tactic.
Yeah, I think it fits into what your storytelling, right? If you're telling a story and trying to carry them along the story, if they don't watch the middle part of the story, they're not going to understand the ending. And so, you know, you just want to check, make sure they're with you all along the way.
Yeah.
I think that's a great idea. So, go ahead.
And I also think just a tip that I use, and I don't know if there's a psychology behind this, I guess there is, but instead of, does anyone have any questions? I make it a little more welcoming with my language of, okay, who has questions at this point?
Okay.
Instead of does anyone, because that just, I don't know, I find that opens the door to speaking up if someone may not necessarily want to. I'm also super big on making sure that I'm being as inclusive as possible with my audience. So I don't only give people the opportunity, not every presentation allows this, but the opportunity to speak up when they have questions, but I usually have some kind of digital technology going on where they can post them as well if they're not someone who's comfortable speaking up. Yeah. That makes sure I really get the opportunity to hear from everyone in the room that wants to participate.
Yeah, so great suggestion. What I noticed is that was not a yes or no question. It was more an open-ended question. Those are always better as an open-ended question rather than a yes or a no. And so that's a little detail that I just noticed from the way you rephrased what I had said.
Yeah, absolutely.
So here's a related question is, what are some good ways to practice these communication skills? So we talk about these, but how do you practice them? What do you recommend in your leadership coaching classes? What are some ideas you give to individuals?
So first off, Nathan, seek out opportunities to speak. The more you speak, the better you're going to get at it, especially if it's an environment where you can get feedback from someone in the audience. And maybe if you're looking to become a better speaker and you have some work presentations coming up, ask a trusted colleague to give you feedback. Say, hey, you know, I'm working on making sure my story is clearer, or I'm working on making sure that what I'm saying is really being supported by my visual aids, or if I'm overloading, or, you know, how I want to know what you thought about where I was on there and where, you know, the audience was, and as far as knowledge level and all of that. So that's one thing. Seek out those opportunities to speak. And I don't mean formal conversations. Leadership these days is made up of a series of spur of the moment impromptu speeches. Yep. And communication. So you can really practice in your everyday as well. But the thing that I do most with clients is, and it's uncomfortable for many people, is recording them and then watching them back with me or on their own. I've got some artificial intelligence technology that I'm going to be rolling out soon that actually helps my clients practice when I'm not there.
To get some,
it's not going to replace me. It's not going to give them the nuance that I'm going to give them, but it records them and allows them to see, you know, okay, well, that was 10% filler words. We have to work on that. Ums and uhs and all that. And, you know, you could have said things that a little more concisely. So it'll give my clients an opportunity to rehearse with some assistance when they're not in a formal session with me or in a training. But recording yourself, and you can do this, you know, when I prepare a brand new talk or workshop, I open a Zoom room for one and I rehearse it with the slides and me, and I watch it back. And that's where I see, Nathan, where what I'm saying isn't syncing up with my slides, or where I'm stumbling over a certain area because I haven't gotten my points right or I'm not as comfortable. And then also how I'm showing up from a body language standpoint. Is my facial expression appropriate for the topic? Is my vocal variety and tone of voice right? You mentioned pace, and is my rate of speech fine? I tend to speak quickly. It's actually kind of, it's not something I teach people, but I have a, when I do my workshops, they're very energetic. So there's a speed that I purposefully do on it.
Yep.
In those, but that's not right for every occasion. So when I'm videoing myself and watching it back, I can see that. And it's really powerful for clients. And it's really powerful for you yourself, even if you do it for an audience of one, you.
That's great. It's so uncomfortable to watch myself on, you know, on a video doing something. It's really uncomfortable for me. But I can see how doing that can give you feedback that you can't get another way, because what you want to understand is, how do other people see you and what are they seeing? And if you do that, you're actually taking the position of a listener then, rather than the speaker. Right. So that's great advice. I hadn't thought about that. I knew you were going to say something about practicing, but yeah. I didn't think you would say something, you know, about recording yourself. So I think that's a great idea. And I'm assuming you can do that on other platforms like, you know, Teams or, you know, I don't even know all the platforms now that do video
WebEx
recordings.
Teams. WebEx, yeah, you can Teams. Even take out your phone and do it if you're just worried about how you're showing up. If you're not worried about seeing how you're syncing with the slides and everything. Yeah, there's lots of opportunities to do that. It's very easy these days.
Yeah. And I think, you know, your other suggestion of seeking out colleagues, as I was managing people, I loved it when someone would come, hey, here's my presentation. Can I walk through it with you? It rarely happened. I loved when that happened. Most of the time I'd have to set up a time and say, hey, can we walk through the presentation before we give it tomorrow?
Right.
Kind of forcing it. But if you're looking to advance your career, call your manager up. Or call, you know, someone that's sort of more senior to you up and say, do you have 30 minutes for me? I want to run through a presentation. I really need another, you know, your thoughts on it. And it will give you the opportunity to understand their perspective on it from a listener, but also they're going to see that you're working to perfect your craft and your communication craft, and it'll help in your career development significantly.
Absolutely. And it's another opportunity just to say that out loud. One of the other big mistakes of my long list of things that I've seen over 30 years is that a lot of times the first time a speaker is hearing their speech or presentation is when they're standing up in front of the final audience delivering it. They've only done it in their head. That's a huge disservice to yourself. You don't know what words are going to trip you up. You don't know. It's a huge mistake. So I love that idea of getting a trusted advisor or even your manager, not only for your career, like you said. I mean, that's important too, but also because it's any opportunity to practice it out loud is going to cause an iterative revision that's going to make the presentation or speech better. The trick is knowing when to stop, knowing when it's good enough, knowing when it's done. because it can always be better.
That's great advice. How do you know when it's done? What are some of the, you know, what happens when you over-prepare? How do you know you're over-preparing for something?
Yeah, an over-preparation happens a lot. I see people, especially those where, or if it's a super high stakes of meeting, or it's a career-defining moment, or that they're just a very nervous speaker, a lot of times people will over-prepare. And I think it's, think about the occasion, the stakes, and the audience. And you want to just try to hit the target of, is it appropriate and ready for them, and am I ready to deliver it? So if it's an informal presentation that I'm going to give to my manager who knows I didn't have a lot of time to put it together and we're just going to have a conversation about it, I don't have to rehearse it as much. But if it's in front of senior leadership team and it's a, or if it's a career defining moment, or it's a super important regulatory interaction, whatever it is, then you want to have it down and you want to make sure that you've rehearsed it. My personal method for knowing I'm ready is I rehearse it. I see if there's anything tripping me up. I think about have I done my audience the service I need to do for them to tell them the story, or is it convincing enough? Is it persuasive? Whatever the goal is, or is it educating enough? And then I kind of just put it aside and I look at it and I say to myself out loud, believe it or not, Michael, are you ready? And I feel it. Like if I'm not, the answer I say, I'm good with 70% of it, but those two sections I'm still not ready with. And I tell myself, it's just such a simple thing. But if I haven't asked myself, I could just keep on going and revising and revising. If the answer to myself is, Michael, you have gone over this so many times, could there be improvements? Yes, but it's time. You're ready. That's just kind of how I do it.
Okay. And so what I'm hearing is it comes from personal experience and your personal comfort with whatever the topic is. And I would think that early in your career, if you're uncomfortable presenting, you're probably going to over-prepare initially. As you get more comfortable with presenting, hopefully you can draw a different line that does, you know, prevents you from over-preparing a little bit more by that self-reflection. I think that's a great idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And just one more note on preparation, because we've been talking a lot about these formal presentations and everything. And I mentioned impromptu speaking, speaking in the moment and leading in the moment. You know, I just want everybody out there to know that those people who are excellent at speaking in the moment are people who've prepared for the topics. They've prepared for that moment to happen. So if you have an important interaction with someone coming up, or you need to make sure that you're on your game with something you have to communicate with your team, prepare for it. That's why people who prepare for Q&A do better.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that leads me to a whole nother topic that I think is super interesting, which is sometimes those impromptu interactions are based on experience. And the only way you can get that experience is having the experience. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes preparation is actually preparing, expecting questions, coming up with things. But there's some of it which is, I've heard that question before, or I've heard a question like that before, and I know where this is going to go. And so I can, you know, speak to it and kind of on my feet. But that kind of experience doesn't come necessarily by book study. It often comes through having interaction. So sometimes it's just the time and the opportunities that build that up, which goes back to volunteer to be a speaker at these things, volunteer to do things, especially when they may not be these high value interactions, you know, small team meetings, things like that, where you can get feedback and have those experiences. And that builds up that experience bank, if you want to call it. It does. Then you can draw from it later.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know what? Networking events are great ways to have conversations like that too. I'm personally, I don't love networking events, but I force myself to go to them because it helps me talk about who I am and what the value I bring and my story. And the more I talk about it, the easier it is to rattle it off when I need to.
Yeah, that's excellent. All right, Michael, one of the other things I wanted to ask you about is this idea of being nervous and being uncomfortable speaking. Are there any tips or tricks or recommendations you have for speakers that just have that uncomfortable, you know, uncomfortableness with the speaking to help them sort of calm down and be able to execute?
Absolutely. And I want to tell your listeners who may be nervous speakers or people who feel anxious when it comes to public speaking that you're not alone. 75% of the population finds it scary, but the people who have practiced and who have had more experience with it are able to lessen their nervousness and anxiety. But I'll give you some specific tips that you can use right away, everybody. So number one is don't forget the power of the pause. It's better to pause than to fill the space with filler words. And the pause also gives you a moment to breathe, and it also gives your audience a moment to catch up. So remember the power of the pause and use them wisely. Number two, to reduce anxiety or nervousness, I like to do breathing exercises, and my clients find them helpful too. I won't walk you through them, Nathan, here, but I'll just mention two that people can Google because they're out there. So one is called the box breath, box, B-O-X, breath. And the other one is just three numbers, 4, 7, 8. So if you Google box breath or 4, 7, 8 breathing exercise, those are two really good exercises. I like the box breath personally when speaking, but I also use 4, 7, 8, like for example, when my mind's racing and I'm having trouble going to sleep, it just kind of brings me down a little bit. So those breathing exercises can really help. Two more things. One, for really nervous speakers, and I had to do this when I was young, was I had to create almost like an alter ego version of Michael that was comfortable. And you know, the story goes that Beyonce had to do this when she was getting uncomfortable with the sizes of the audiences, I think the story was, and she created that Sasha Fierce alter ego that made her feel comfortable performing at that level. I did that for myself at one point. I wasn't being fake, I wasn't being me, but I was just summoning the part of me that wanted to show up, but that in the moment didn't feel genuine to me. And then eventually I got comfortable just being my true self in that. And then the final one is, let's look at nervousness in a different way. It's not all bad. There's actually a lot of good in feeling nervous, because what does it mean? It means you care. You care Yeah, you care about how you come across. You care about the topic. That's why you're there. And most of all, it's a cool gift that you care so much about the audience that you're feeling nervous. So when you reframe it as I'm feeling this way because this matters and I care, and sometimes the positive energy will come from that because that's a positive way to reframe your nervousness.
Yeah. And, you know, I've also found, I love that sort of connecting with the audience on a human level or emotional level. Depending on the type of presentation you're doing, it's okay to say something like, I don't feel like I'm getting this across in the best way. Let me try again. Or I don't know if this is going to come out right. Let me explain it this way, but I want to stop and see if that makes sense. So kind of telling your audience, I'm going to try to say this, but I'm not comfortable with, you know, I'm not sure I'm going to get my message across. Now, if you're in an FDA advisory committee meeting, that's not the thing to say.
Right, exactly.
But if you're in a group meeting or even with a one-on-one with your client, that's okay to say. And they kind of, they recognize it and go, oh, they're trying here, but they recognize that, you know, this may not be perfect. So I'm going to help them out or her out.
Yeah.
And
absolutely.
So I love that kind of bringing the human element into it. I think that's really important.
Absolutely. No, that's good advice. Definitely.
So one other thing is around kind of structure of communication. As scientists, we follow the scientific method. We have a hypothesis. We then have some method that we're going to test that hypothesis. We generate results and then we draw a conclusion. So almost every presentation you see will follow those four steps. And those presentations, in my opinion, are not very good. So what is a better structure? As you said, telling a story, what's a better structure for scientific presentations that help tell a story that aren't a manuscript that you'd find in a journal?
Yeah, and you alluded to it earlier by talking about, you know, tell them what's coming, tell them what you're going to tell them, then tell them, give them the information and the supporting facts, and then tell them what you've told them. And that follows the communication theory of primary recency, where people are going to remember the first and last things you told them, which is always good to make sure that that information is at the top and the bottom. So that's very important to do. And sometimes with the presentations that follow that structure that you talked about, you have an opportunity within each section to do that. Okay. Here's what's coming. Here's the meat. Here's the evidence. Here's the details. Here's the support. Here's what I told you. And now I'm going to transition to the next thing. So when you have to follow that structure, you can use that gotcha. Internal, you know, in each of the sections. Sometimes it's a different type of presentation entirely, and you have to just re-engineer it and tell the story in a different way. Sometimes it's an audience that doesn't really know what they're in for, and you have to mm-hmm. grab their attention and welcome them into the conversation. And sometimes workshops that I do, I purposefully don't want them to know what's coming. So gotcha. But I still have to give them roadmaps and mile markers for them to feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. So I think the bottom line is to just map it for them so that, and you can even do this in Q&A. So if someone asks you a question and you have to give an answer and it's going to be multi-part, you can say, all right, I heard three things that I'm going to touch on. The first is this, the second is this, the third is this. I'm going to do the third thing first. And then you hit it. Then you go, okay, and now the second thing. And then, so you've told them how you're going to respond to them. So they're now ready and more likely to be able to easily follow.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, I like that idea of even if you have to follow a certain structure, is still, hey, this is what this section's about, and here's the results, and then remind them at the end.
Right. So, exactly.
Yeah, the worst thing in a presentation is, or any communication, is the first time you say things on a conclusion slide are on the conclusion slide.
Right.
Mm-hmm. If you haven't said those things all along, you know, what you want is people just nodding their heads on the conclusion slide because they've already heard all of that and they already know all of that from the presentation. That's the best, best outcome when I'm presenting, at least from my perspective.
That makes sense. Absolutely. Yeah.
So tell me what your biggest, if you could put a take-home message or two take-home messages in the brains of the listeners, what are the biggest messages you'd like people to take home from, you know, our chat about communication for scientists?
Yeah, there's two, Nathan. The first one is, and it's back to how we started, remember your audience and craft your communications for them. Most of the communications that we craft, whether it be presentations, emails, down to Slack or team messages, or even text messages to people in our personal lives, we craft them for us. What we want, mm-hmm. what we need, how we're going to say something. When you take 30 seconds with those messages and longer for a presentation to step back and say, is this what my audience needs to hear from me for them to do whatever action you want, learn something, be convinced of something, be persuaded, be inspired, whatever it is. Have I given them what they need for that communication to be effective? So remember your audience, craft your communication for them. Number two... is be a better listener. Because what we do generally is we live in a distracted world, even especially when I coach people, leaders, for Q&A after a presentation. Half the time what happens is the question comes at them, the speaker is asking the question, my client thinks they know what the question is, starts preloading the answer, and then the actual question is something different. And then they don't answer the question. And then we talked about honoring, that makes the questioner not feel honored. So in your business life, during presentations and Q&A, and in your personal life, actively listen when someone's talking to you, honor them as a human, honor their concerns even if you disagree, and hear them out fully before you reply.
Excellent. There is so much more we could talk about. I always love talking with you, but Michael, thank you so much for joining me today. How can my listeners get in touch with you if they want to learn more about leadership, communication, or maybe they have some specific questions and would like some coaching from you? You know, I know you do individual coaching as well as sort of group level coaching. So how can they get in touch with you?
Sure, absolutely. Well, first, thank you, Nathan, for having me on. This was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed the conversation. It's always great to talk to you as well. So I really appreciate that. As far as how folks can find me, you can go to my website at wearecomvia, that's C O V as in Victor, IA. And I know, Nathan, you'll put that in the show notes for people because I know it's a mouthful. You can also find me on LinkedIn. I'm very active on LinkedIn. You can connect with me there. You can direct message me there. I share a lot of leadership communication tips. And then I also have a newsletter that goes out partially on LinkedIn, but then also to a subscriber list. So if you want to get monthly communication tips and ramblings from me, just go to my website and hit and find the subscribe page and subscribe to my newsletter. I'd love for you to get that content and then let me know what you want to hear from me going down the road.
Awesome. And then I think do you have a leadership meeting or opportunity coming up shortly in the near future here that might be appropriate for scientific individuals?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that. I have two. The first one is March 19th and 20th. It's an in-person two-day workshop. It's called Coaching for Commitment, and it teaches senior leaders and managers a process for coaching for success to help your team feel developed and feel that you're investing in their future. And then also, it specifically focuses a lot on those difficult performance improvement conversations mm-hmm. that so many leaders avoid because they're hard. Well, this course teaches you a proven process to have those conversations. And you know what? When people have those conversations sooner, when they have a process that they know works for those conversations, they have them sooner. And then that's better for culture and better for the organization. Yeah. The second one is going to be about presenting for life sciences leaders. And I don't have dates for that yet, but if you subscribe to my newsletter, that's coming up in either April or March. So I'm excited about that too. That'll be a two-day in-person program as well.
Wonderful. Michael, again, thank you so much for joining me today. And I appreciate all your time. And I hope all my listeners have a great week this week. For more information, please connect with me on LinkedIn, send me an email to nathan@tushersolutions.com, or sign up for my newsletter at tushersolutions.com/newsletter. The newsletter is a copy of the show notes sent to your email each time an episode is released. Also, please subscribe to this podcast wherever you listen to the show. Thank you.